a lot of people say, like, the profit's in the buying. If you're selling stuff, the profit's in the buying, not in the selling. In a certain way, that's the flip of when I'm taking on a client. You know, there's no quoting of prices or anything until we have a discovery call. Well, I'll sit on that call and I've got three real key hurdles that the client has to get through. So it's not me begging them to come on board. This is a two-way thing. Are we right for each other? The first one is that I am a zero partner. That's the accounting software we use is zero. There is no other software for accountancy used in here because I don't want to support multiple systems. And I just want to focus on one. That means we can be the best at it and deliver best service and the best training and the best support on that. Secondly, I want to hear from the business owner about what they want to do with their business, where they want to go with it. Are they ambitious? Do they want to grow it? If they want to do that, then I'm interested. And then the final one is I instantly go, if we go on to pricing, I'm not going to be the cheapest. If you're ambitious to grow your business, but you want a cheap price, I won't be the cheapest accountant on the street because I'm building in costs to be that growth partner for you. Me giving that client's details or that potential business to a third party is massive for me. It's huge. That's my name going on that person. They might be on a transactional job, right? It's a one-off job. I want them to view that as importantly as I view that client. To get through and be that qualified contact is important for me because I want to be sure that if I give them, they represent themselves brilliantly and they deliver their service.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder with my partner Richard of ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical software. And today I am joined by James Bennett. James has an unusual claim as an accountant. Now, I'll tell you a story. Almost every accountant I have ever met has told me how they are strategic partners for their clients, and they work on the forward-facing business building activities that can really add value. I can also tell you that almost none of them manage to actually do that and actually end up as glorified bookkeepers 90% of the time. Sometimes it's the client's fault, sometimes the accountant's fault, but James has managed to, or he claims to have managed to, build a practice where he has actually built that relationship with clients to build their business and become a true partner. And to do this, he has a secret weapon, and we're going to hear about that secret weapon today. So James, thanks very much for coming on to the show. Maybe you could just give us a bit more background before we hear all about this tool you have for becoming a true partner to your clients.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be part of your growing podcast. I'm James Bennett, founder, CEO, MD, whatever you want to call, of JBEN Finance. We are a full service accounting practice, but as James said, we've really focused on supporting those businesses grow. And we do that through two ways: outsourcing your finance department and also providing fractional CFO or finance director, depending if you're in the UK or the US. And that's the high level secret weapon, but we'll get into that later. Personal background is that over the course of my career, I've worked in the construction industry, did sort of 12 years in the investment banking sector across some interesting banks, members of executive boards. And I think we touched on it earlier offline around, I gave up the investment banking for those challenges that everyone has around starting a family, looking after your children, and that battle of dual parent working, which resulted in me opening the practice and running that practice. And as I said above, this practice covers the compliance work that we call it in the industry, which I talk to clients about, is that's keeping you legal. And then the advisory side of the business, which is much, much more around being that strategic growth partner. And that's the bit that is the challenge. But I think my background and my experience is why I've succeeded better in that than maybe others that James alludes to.
So you and I both have successful spouses, and I guess my spouse could have retired me. But then I would have had to actually look after my own kids, which is part push, part pull. So if you're honest, you could have sat back and done nothing and look after the kids, quote unquote. But how much of that was the fear of having to, how many kids do you have?
Just got one boy, but a very active, excitable boy he was at five. And I think you're right, 100%. I could have just put my feet up and stuff, but I got dragged into school governance and education sector and working for Essex County Council and then ultimately starting my practice because I had people asking me to support them and help them. And I think it's in you as a person that you, I just didn't want to sit around and be retired at mid-30s, which, looking back, maybe that was a better idea, but it's too late now.
So you moved out to Southend, I believe. You got involved with the school a bit. I mean, you just didn't set out with a plan to move out to Southend and set up an accountancy practice, but what were the sort of questions that you were getting asked?
It's quite unknown that the governors of a school who sort of run the school, that is actually the biggest non-employed or like voluntary sector in the UK, believe it or not. Each school needs like 10 to 12 people to run it that meet up quarterly or whatever. And I kind of got sucked into it because I was at the school gate and I was putting my feet up and people said, oh, you should join, you should do this. And you kind of join and quickly you find that you get more dragged into it and more involved in it. And then, I ended up working for Essex County Council on helping schools that were failing, on going on small boards to turn them around quickly where governance had failed. And that's where I met some people who were working for other schools because of the academisation agenda where schools are run as businesses effectively. And these people were going, I don't know how I charge, I don't know about my tax, I don't know anything, because they'd been in local government for 25 years. So I started up a couple of businesses and supported them in how they did their tax and bits like that. And then it kind of just grew and people went, well, you should speak to James and you should get him to do this and that. And it's just word of mouth, really. And it's been an interesting journey up to now.
So governance is an interesting topic. When you said it was governance they were struggling with, was it just basic compliance and tax or?
No, I mean, it's across the board, isn't it? I mean, people go on the governing body of a school because they think they want to change the school and ultimately be careful of my hobby horse here, but that's not what governance is. Governance isn't about your school, driving the school or changing the school uniform or the hours the school works, really. It's about making sure that the structure that the head teacher puts in, your CEO in the real world, delivers what they say they're going to deliver and monitoring that and actually checking things and triangulating data and challenging, that head teacher, but also be their friend, which again lends itself so much to what I do in that I'll challenge that business owner, but I also want to be his friend, but he's also my client. So navigating that narrow band of who that end client is, probably the governance has set me well again to support those businesses going forward. That governance is just because people don't understand what they're doing and then they get involved and it's too late at that point once they're in and they just either don't know what they're doing or don't want to do it or don't have time, and then things drop and things fail and then Ofsted get involved and then you're in real trouble.
This is kind of being under the category of being a director, I guess, and where your responsibilities are governance, complying with the law, strategy and service. That's the sort of way I would look at it, like the three things.
Yeah, people get into it for the wrong reasons and then don't and focus on the wrong bits. And I think that's difficult. And I mean, the overriding challenge in all schools, wherever they are, pretty much in the UK, is the funding side of things, that they're just the funding challenges is huge. More and more children are being diagnosed or having, learning difficulties of some way, shape or form. There is no bigger pot, so more of that pot has to be allocated to those children because there's legal requirements and that has to come from somewhere, and that tends to come from the mainstream pot. So the cake doesn't get any bigger, the percentage of the cake changes, and that's a massive challenge. And teachers are under incredible pressure. That learning is lent through to the services I provide within my practice now in running that very careful border between client, paying for a service, challenging, being a friend, and pushing them a bit to realize their potential or their goals.
You got your hands dirty working on a few boards, and then you give a busy man a job, I guess. You got more and more working with these. Who was your very first client, and how did you get them?
It was a lady that I was on one of the exec boards with, and we were just sitting having lunch, and she was going, oh yeah, I'm taking early retirement. The council offered me a great deal. But so-and-so's asked me to do some work, but they want me to be a limited company, and I just don't know. I said, well, you just got to do X, Y, Z, da, 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 And I'd been sitting next to her for sort of a few months doing finance stuff. And she looked at me as if, oh, you know what to do with that as well. Yeah, kind of, yeah. Done a few years study to get me there. So it kind of rolled in that, can you tell me what I need to do? And then it was like, that's really good you telling me what you do. Can you just do it for me? And that's kind of how it happened. And I was like, well, if I do it for one, I need to find some more, because there's costs associated with like your insurance and all your softwares and all everything. So, and your practice certificate and everything. So, and then it just rolled from like word of mouth and from going to networking events and getting some luck in hitting some startup businesses that needed accountants, to be honest.
We got to this, you're right, I sold hard at the start, it's in my nature, which is about how you are the accountant, which actually is a true business partner to your clients. How do you actually manage to get there? Because I can understand the idea, this sounds great, that I'll have someone who can really help me, you know, be at my level in my business and help me deliver it. But then, you know, when push comes to shove, it's actually harder to get to that for some reason. So when you're taking on board a client, how do you set that up for success? How do you become that trusted partner?
I think like a lot of things, it's, you know, a lot of people say like the profit's in the buying. You know, if you're selling stuff, the profit's in the buying, not in the selling. In a certain way, that's the flip of when I'm taking on a client. You know, there's no quoting of prices or anything until we have a discovery call. Well, I'll sit on that call and I've got three real key hurdles that the client has to get through. So it's not me begging them to come on board. This is a two-way thing. Are we right for each other? The first one is that I am a zero partner. That's the accounting software we use is zero. There is no other software for accountancy used in here because I don't want to support multiple systems and I just want to focus on one. That means we can be the best at it and deliver best service and the best training and the best support on that. Secondly, I want to hear from the business owner about what they want to do with their business, where they want to go with it. Are they ambitious? Do they want to grow it? If they want to do that, then I'm interested. And then the final one is I instantly go, if we go on to pricing, I'm not going to be the cheapest. So if you're ambitious to grow your business, but you want a cheap price, I won't be the cheapest accountant on the street because I'm building in costs to be that growth partner for you. Most of them gloss over the third part and nod anyway. But if I feel one and two they're happy with, then we'll go away. We will do a lot of research on their business. We've taken some information away. We're booking again for another week's time or something for a bit longer call. We'll do our research on the business and come back and go through the pricing that we think they need and the services they need to achieve the goals and the ambitions they've talked to us about at the start. I think it's really important on who you take on. That's the key bit. And I think that's where we've been successful is we've got clients that want to move forward.
We definitely do that as well in our business where, you know, for example, we don't do inventory very well. We're not an inventory system. And some people come through looking for inventory. We're like, sorry, we don't do it. And we exclude them.
Because you're going to fail before you've started. You're going to let them down and not deliver on their basic aspect of what they want. That's key, I think, in business. Many people will just take what they want and not move forward.
I'm picturing a kind of a Dragon's Den situation here where you're sitting there thinking, is this guy really, or this girl really got what it takes to work with us? Have you ever looked at someone and went, these people are not ambitious enough for me?
100%. I had a referral come through and he made clear in his conversation that he had a window of 12 months to run a limited company because he just wanted to maximize his expenses and then he was going to close it down. He told me that openly in the conversation and that doesn't fit with what I want to do or what I'm looking for. One, the red flag is I want to be aggressive in my tax management. Well, I don't want that. I don't want to have fights over, can I claim this or I'm going to claim that or I'm not going to claim that. I'm not putting my name to that kind of stuff. And two, he's got a time frame of 12 months, which in a limited company isn't really 12 months. It's probably 2 years by the time you've done your year end accounts, paid all your tax, sorted all your closed it, cleared out the bank account, gone through the wind down process and actually closed it, which people then don't want to pay for because they've moved on, right? You know, that's one example.
I'm going to push you a bit more on this because what you basically said is, I want customers that are rich enough to pay me. But how can you really get to that level where you are a business partner, more like the CFOs or CFD, as you might say?
Maybe I've over-egged how expensive we are. We're not going to be the cheapest on the street, but we're not going to be mega bucks if you're a startup company. But what you've got to understand is we're factoring in a lot of support that you won't see. So that offer kind of, if they want it, they will then get to that point and we can factor in further business support and they will then be a long-term customer. So from my point of view, I might allocate more resource, more time early on in that relationship in the basis that I'm going to have that client for 10 to 15 years. And obviously, once I've started with them and I've helped them and they've got through that 1 or 2 year cycle and they now understand what their role is in the business, you know, that they're running and they're well behaved. We like our well behaved clients. They do their best to send in their invoices and they do their best to raise their invoices and they come to us when they've got problems and we've got that nailed down in two-way communication. Then they become a lot easier client to manage and we reap the rewards in year 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 onwards. And that's how we look at it from a from a perspective point of view.
Now, you require your clients to do something every quarter that not everyone does.
If you get through our three hurdles and you sign up, we only really ask our clients to do three things, really. One is we want them to raise their own invoices, because we found that by the time someone tells you who they want to pay, their address, the amount, how they want it broken down, the payment date, et cetera, you can just do it yourself. It's so much quicker. You know, we will provide face-to-face training if you want it. We'll do online training if you want it. We've got a client portal with videos on how to do it. And that's the beauty of being zero only, right? We know it inside out. We can deliver it. And that's the only thing we ask clients to do on that front. And then we want receipts and invoices. But we've got a tech solution that means that you can just have an app on your phone. So you snap the receipt straight away, done, gone, don't need the receipt, uploaded, job done. If you get an email with an invoice, you've got an individual email address that you save into your contacts and you just forward it straight on. Don't need any writing, no nothing. It goes in, gets sucked in, and you will have seen it millions of times, I suspect. Screen grabs the information we need and sorted. So that's one bit. The second bit is they've got unlimited access to us. So there's no cost to call us. There's no cost to email us. You know, if you want to come in, have a coffee, chocky biscuit. We're here. We will talk to you. If we can answer your query, we will answer the query. If we need to go away with it, we'll go away and we'll come back to you. And then I guess the bit that you're alluding to is everyone gets a quarterly meeting, be that face-to-face if possible. We like face-to-face. We don't want to hide in our office or online, or a telephone call or whatever, but that quarterly call request goes out on time every quarter saying, we'd like a meeting with you. And I think it comes back to the barriers to get in, is that most of them want to do it. They might be skeptical at the start, you know, oh, I'm going to be lectured about my finances and boring accounting and corporation tax. But that's not what we're looking for. What we're looking for is we're looking to listen to those clients and understand, you know, we nudge them. We go, how's business? What's the problems? What challenges you're facing? And capture those challenges and then see if we can help and suggest stuff that might be directly from us. So, you know, we've got some examples we can talk through, or it might be that we've got a qualified contact. We spend, obviously, as accountants, we come across a lot of people. I like to class them as qualified contacts because I've either got firsthand experience of them, I've paid for their services, or I've seen their services and actions for another client, and that client would verify them. The big thing is what we talked about a bit earlier was that longevity of client with me. Me giving that client's details or that potential business to a third party is massive for me. It's huge because that's my name going on that person. But they might be on a transactional job, right? It's a one-off job. I want them to view that as importantly as I view that client. To get through and be that qualified contact is important for me because I want to be sure that if I give them one, they represent themselves brilliantly and they deliver their service and it doesn't have a knock-on effect on me. And that's very important. And most clients do want that quarterly meeting. Some don't, but get it. But I would say we get three meetings a year minimum with our clients. You know, they might not come straight away, but we'll go and see them. If they haven't, we'll push it a bit more. And like I said, it's not us preaching. If the chap watches it, he'll know who he is. But we're often down the pub on a Friday afternoon for our quarterly meeting. And that's what it is. Just take a few notes, just to chill out, take the pulse, see how you're doing, problems, issues with us, problems, issues with your business, etc. That's the relationship that we want to build.
Yeah, sometimes like people are running a business. I mean, if they're running it, they feel quite isolated in that they maybe have staff, maybe have a partner, maybe not. And then, you know, you go home to your spouse who may or may not be interested. So who's left really at a business level to have a chat about, and people are actually interested in the business?
As accountants, we are in really privileged positions because we see a lot more than anyone else, probably more than the person's partner at home, right? In the under the bonnet side of the business. That's a trusted position, which one, you know, you need to respect and that's why we work within so many code of conducts and regulations. But it's also a position where you should use to benefit them. And that's how I look at it, that I want to help these guys and girls do as best as they can to achieve their goals, whatever those goals look like for them. And I think that's where we can really add value. And I think that's the secret bit of how I look at people and how I look at businesses to support them.
Let's talk about some of your success stories, I guess, or where this quarterly meeting has really paid off and what you were able to do for your clients, kind of surprise them or expand it beyond, you know, just getting the books done. Who's your favorite client?
I like all the clients. And the biggest thing when I get a new employee in or someone joins the firm is that they're all different, right? They've all got their own things. They've all got their own nuances and they've all got their own outlooks and what they want to achieve. And I think that's really quick to learn. You know, I have my biggest client, the chap who runs that is massively entrepreneurial, runs at 100 miles an hour, agrees and sells brilliantly, and then leaves the doing bit behind for people to sort out, which tends to be me. In the last 5 years I've been working with him, you know, we've took one business that he had that had a turnover of circa 100,000 and four employees to over 1.2 million turnover and 40 employees. It's heavily person driven. It's all staff cost mostly. But you've gone from a business that you could sit in one room and manage as an owner to having structure and processes and delegation to take place. And that process isn't easy for people to accept, right? As a business owner, giving away who's going to look after the bank account, who's going to order stuff, who's going to do this. Being very entrepreneurial and growing that business, putting processes in place is challenging for that person. So they have to be done somehow.
So how dirty did your hands get there? Because it sounds like a huge amount of change. This guy sounds like your typical entrepreneur guy who runs around doing all the things. But then, like you say, what did you end up doing for that client?
This is where those qualified contacts come in to a certain extent. HR, you know, is a heavily, like I said, a heavily people-orientated business. We were struggling with contracts and sickness and all of this sort of thing around the business as it was growing. So they had a template contract that came from a very well-known big HR company that really was a template one, not fit for business, not fit for the structure of the business. And instantly, you know, that's not my expertise, but I know a lady who is. For a fixed price, she comes in, delivers what she needs to deliver, in, out, done. And then she's there as a backup on an hourly rate contracted if and when she's needed. And then IT is another one. IT is a really interesting one because I speak to a lot of businesses and they might go, yeah, I'm all on OneDrive. It's all good. It's all cloud based. I'm all covered. And you're like, so you know, in your T's and C's on OneDrive that Microsoft does not back up your data. Yeah, but it says backup and stuff. If their server goes down and they lose your data, it's not their problem. You realize that. They're like, no. Who reads their 600 paid T's and C's, right? Apart from some IT bot who I use, they're not liable for your loss of data if, you know, all their data centers went down and they didn't have a backup of it, you know, or something random, which it's up to you if you want to take that risk. I know it's probably small, but can you lose all your data?
No. Well, I guess if Microsoft goes down, there's probably bigger problems in the world that we need to worry about. But yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah.
I work again with an IT provider there that comes in. He manages all your users. You know, like when you get to like 30, 40 people, you've got user permissions and all this. You've got backing up data. You've got people coming and going and protecting your data. And, you know, we've experienced that where someone's downloaded loads of data and done a runner. So you bring in these experts to come in, deal with it and deliver what you need. And it's kind of making sure they happen. And then on the finance side, which is what I covered, was very much, you know, how are we funding this growth? Because you're getting people on board paying salaries and you're not actually earning money off them for 2 to 3 months, potentially, possibly. So there's a cash flow issue around managing that and supporting that growth, that rapid growth. Contracting with the local council, always a challenge. You know, you have to provide a lot of detail to get paid from them, and managing that relationship and turning those payment rounds when you are growing quick. You can't wait 5 extra days for a payment because they're running on the cash flow coming in to go and out.
That sounds like a COO as much as it is a CFO in some regards. It sounds like a lot of work for your accountant to do. Do you ever get like an equity position for that? Or
on that particular business, I haven't, but in future businesses I've done with that person, we've taken joint positions and equity positions in some of them as an option, which is good. And it kind of works because that expertise is better than just a monthly paycheck, if that makes sense.
It must be fun to get a chance to look into all these businesses, see what people are doing. If you get to an equity stake, that's all the better. That's a kind of a demonstration that you're getting to this stage of more than just the accountant, pardon expression. because people are dishing out or they're going into business with you and so on. So that's really important. Was this the shoe distribution business we're talking about here?
This was a in the education sector. But yeah, I mean, one of the interesting ones, you know, without going into loads of detail and going on forever, to explain some of the random stuff that comes across the desk here through the door that we end up getting involved in and doing. And this is a really, you know, really good example of it. The background is that there's an international shoe manufacturer and distributor distributed shoes in the UK, but through a third party distribution person. So in essence, they had no presence in the UK other than sending their shoes here and then obviously paying the distribution company a cut of effectively their profits. This was back in December 22, actually, we started talking to them and it was, we want to set up our own UK distribution entity because we don't want to pay the extra profit, which is fair enough, made sense. Brexit also had an effect on that, where the VAT to sell directly from Europe into UK had extra charges on it. So by having a UK company and delivering direct from China where they made the shoes, obviously made the shoes cheaper as well. So not only were they given to the distribution company in the UK, they were also given to the exchequer. So they were contributing to, it wasn't tax efficient effectively. So we talked about what they needed. Again, it was setting it up from zero. That was going to be a 6-month project to slowly wean them off that distribution entity and make it work and everything like that. But sort of in February 23, that distribution company just went bust overnight, closed down. That shoe company lost nigh on $1 million of revenue annually overnight. They're producing shoes in China to meet that demand. So you can't turn that demand off quickly. We went from 6-month project, and we delivered an entire working business with the two employees that they employed in the UK in 6 weeks. We reduced that down massively.
Let me get that straight. You did the job posting, you did the interviewing, you found the warehouse.
They very quickly had an employee on board in the UK who had worked for that distributor, funnily enough. So he found himself out of a job and then he very quickly found himself a job. And working closely with him, well, on his side, he found the fulfillment center. So the pick, pack and send. And then on my side, I created the business, the UK entity. We sourced the underlying banking because that was a challenge because of the ownership structure. We've registered to import goods with corporation tax, with VAT, with PAYE. We set the pension up. We set all the accounting process up. We set up an expense process because obviously they're going to have salespeople that were going to go traveling around and needed expenses. So we've got a process placed in that. And then the biggest piece that we did and worked hand in hand with the guy who was employed was making a process from order capture through to order delivery to make it as automated and as less human interaction as possible, if that makes sense. So we did a procurement process, which if I'd known about you, I probably would have come and spoke to you and said, help me here. The challenge was around like an ordering and a stock system. And you'll probably know better than me. And I didn't realize until you start asking is obviously shoes have one shoe, but you have different colorways. And then every colorway has 20 or 30 sizes because they have length and width in shoes, right? You ended up with like 6,000 different shoes, that 6,000 items in the database, which doesn't, I don't know whether it sounds a lot or not, but apparently it's quite chunky. Very much like you said, when you were talking about clients coming to you and saying, do you do inventory? And you say, no. That's what we found when we started ringing up all these stock places and having meetings with them, that they were like, yeah, we're really a food industry specialist. And you're like, okay, brilliant. That's fine. I don't want to try and fit my round pole in a square hole.
Well, let me ask you about that because I'm interested about the buying process there. So, you know, you've got Xero, which has got a big ecosystem, I guess. You know, we're a Xero partner and they have an app store and you've got to find, you know, thousands of. So I guess that was your first stop.
Yeah, stock ordering systems in the app store because we needed it to talk to Xero. We needed to automate that because they're running on 2 or 3 employees in the UK, a tiny, tiny employees for the revenue they're doing. You know, the flip side of the other client, I've got 40 odd employees for £1 million revenue, and then you've got 3 employees for £1 million revenue. That's what I'm saying by every client is so different and their own challenges. So yeah, that was the list. That sort of gave us our list of who we're going to talk to. And then it was just a question of booking those meetings, understanding what we needed and narrowing it down to ones that could deliver the service we needed.
And how long did it take? What made it easy for people and what was frustrating about it?
I think the good bits were actually the refreshingness of some of the suppliers like you said, we can't do that. We're not the right software for you.
They qualified you quickly.
And I think that's so great because they didn't hook us along. They didn't drag us out and say, yeah, we can do it, and then deliver something that they couldn't deliver. Because our importance was getting the business online as quick as we could. That was our number one goal, because people were making orders via email and they're queuing up and we've got no order system. There's no business. There's no way to take the money. There's no way to invoice them. Having the right system to deliver the right service was so important. So one, those service providers saying we're not the right service provider was really, really important for us. And I think secondly was knowing that it could work with Xero was quick. And then it was just understanding their process of what they could offer. And then what support will they give us? Because obviously 2 employees in the UK isn't a lot of support. So a lot of people. So what's your back end support like, reading the reviews? And ultimately we came to a system called Unleashed, it's called. And that has been, you know, really, really solid. It's really done the job it needed to do. And there's a small manual process of when we pass the order to the fulfillment center and they pass it back. But other than that, from the moment an order goes in to the moment the invoice goes out and the money comes in, there's 2 small manual handovers and that's it.
It sounds like a wholesale distributorship. So they have the shops logging in, basically placing their order.
A couple of salespeople out on the road can take orders and input them themselves. And there is a B2B platform that the shops can order directly themselves. Coming on this year is a B2C website, which will back into Unleashed as well, which they've been working with Unleashed as well. Now, an order coming in from a website into a system is not worrying me because I know the process flow works well.
And they are unleashed.com, is that it? Unleashed.com. Okay. Well, we will we'll feature them in the newsletter that accompanies this podcast when we launched the podcast. So if you're not on the newsletter, you can sign up at procurementexpress.com/newsletter. So if people are looking for that link, they can get the link there. Okay, I'll tell you what convinced me was the fact that you're getting equity stakes in your business, in your business partners. Right? I was like, I'm not sure, this sounds familiar. But then that was the proof in the pudding. And then having those quarterly meetings with people, especially since you're able to do them in the pub. As an Irish guy, I can appreciate that. Before we wrap up, tell me, who's your biggest business hero?
My wife says I'm a bit sad because I don't read any fiction books whatsoever. When I do get time to read, it's all about business books and stuff like this. And I think one of the first business books I ever read was Richard Branson's Losing My Virginity. It was great. It's a really good book, whether he wrote it or not, who knows. It was really good. And hopefully some of the stories are true. And the one where he's standing out on Oxford Street counting people walking past is brilliant because it just shows, you know, that's just an accountant thing to do, right? How do I choose which shop to go to? Well, I'm going to stand outside and count how many people walk past, and that will be my driver for where I want to put my shop. That is real, real data driven. The accountant would have loved that if he had one at the time. And then I'm going to give a bit of a shout out. My other one, I'm going to give a shout out to another Essex boy. It's a guy called James Sinclair. So he runs the Business Broadcast podcast and now on YouTube. He's got 350 plus episodes where he has businesses on his podcast. And from his experience of running multi-million pound businesses, he tells those business owners how to grow and what he'd do if he was sitting in their seat. And I learn a lot from it and I take a lot from it because he's got a great bit of experience. And a lot of it is I agree with. So I like listening to him too. So yeah, I would definitely check him out as well if you're into these podcasts.
I have read Branson's book as well. The thing that stuck out for me with that was this, the scene where he was making so much money from his record label that he was stuffing all the cash in the drawers of his desk. And then he was trying to hide it from his staff because he wasn't really, the staff found out, they were all saying, he was giving them the impression they were on a shoestring, and his staff wandered into the office and found all this cash. Like, what the hell? I thought you were telling me we were going to go broke.
I'd definitely advise clients not to keep cash in their drawer. That's not the best way to do it.
I have my business partner, Rich. He used to do IT support for this English school in Dublin, who's, you know, they taught English to foreign students, and massive cash business. And this guy who owned it, he had like, every time Rich would come around to get an invoice paid, he'd be like, he'd start diving down the back of filing cabinets and like doing whatever. And Rich made him an offer. He said, listen, your office is a complete mess. It was a pigsty. He says, listen, I'll do you a deal. I'll clean your office for you if I can find all the cash I find, you know. And the guy was like, no way. James, this has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed talking to you about biz. How can people reach out to you? What's the easiest way if they feel like, you know?
If people think they're going to beat my three hurdles, they're more than welcome. No, I'm only joking. They're more than welcome to reach up, have a chat. You can get me at my website, www.j-benben.co.uk. I'm on LinkedIn. Just search James Bennett. You'll see my company up. We are on Twitter and or X and Instagram and all TikTok and all of them, but we don't post massively because we're busy supporting our clients, really. They're the two ways you can get me.
Thanks very much. If you've enjoyed this interview and you feel like you could be a good guest on the show or you'd like to recommend someone, please reach out to me, james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com. Until the next one, see you later.